Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity. I'm Greg Corumbus, and Jim will get to the president's speech on Libya from Monday night in just a moment. But let's start with the good martini of the day, because it's clearly not that speech. The Supreme Court will soon be taking up the issue of public financing of elections. We certainly got a major decision from the court not that long ago, one that was very favorable to folks like us who think that pretty much anyone has a voice and wants to express that voice during a campaign should be allowed to. It got a scolding for the Supreme Court from the president during a State of the Union address last year. Now the Supreme Court taking up another Arizona law that would pretty much do away with public financing. And I got to say, I really like what Arizona is doing lately. Some of these bills have been very controversial, but in the end, I think they're definitely heading in the right direction. What's your sense on whether the high court's ready to dig into this again or not?
Arizona the trailblazer, indeed. this was on Monday. They had oral arguments on a legal challenge, a constitutional challenge to Arizona's law, which basically, if somebody donates to a candidate past a certain point, the state's public financing kicks in and gives more money to the opponent. The idea is that if you have the bad luck to run against a millionaire or a very popular candidate, then the state should step in to help you. It's kind of a way for the state to step in and help candidates who just aren't that popular and aren't that good at raising money. Obviously, there's a long, some time before the Supreme Court makes its decision, but the questioning from Chief Justice John Roberts certainly seemed to indicate it was possible that the same 5-4 majority that ruled on Citizens United versus FEC would have the same kind of perspective on this one. Roberts asked about whether this law's purpose and effect are to produce less speech in political campaigns. And the lawyer for the Institute for Justice, who was challenging this Arizona law, said yes. I mean, basically, you're telling people that even if you donate to the candidate you like, more money will go to the candidate you don't like. And I think this kind of comes to the heart of the problem with public financing. Greg, you and I are right of center guys, and I don't like the concept of my tax dollars going to left of center candidates. And for that matter, let's suppose David Duke runs for office again. How'd you like to be an African-American taxpayer knowing that your tax dollars are going to a pretty explicitly racist candidate? The idea of public financing is everybody has to give to everybody. And I think that's kind of contrary to the concept of the First Amendment. If you want to support a particular viewpoint, you should be able to get out your checkbook and make your donations. I don't think the government needs to take money from you and give them to certain folks because they've deemed them to be underdogs. So I think there's a strong case there. Of course, it's the Supreme Court. You never really know how things are going to shake out. But potentially, the entire concept, this kind of left of center notion of government intervention to make sure that nobody's too unpopular candidates aren't too underfunded, hopefully will come to an end. And people will realize that sometimes underfunded candidates are underfunded for a reason, because no one likes them.
Go Arizona, go Supreme Court. I'm talking to you, Justice Kennedy. We know you're going to be the swing vote on this one. And I'm curious, though, Jim, I don't know if you know this, whether or not Reince Priebus and the National Republican Party actually put in an amicus brief on behalf of the existing law, because they would love to have $1 billion in matching funds if President Obama can raise that on the national level. Obviously, this is completely separate from Arizona, but I'm sure the National Republican Party would kind of like to see that in the 2012 campaign season.
Well, if you'll recall, actually, remember, this is something that McCain did do, and that I believe it was Bob Dole also did. It generally doesn't work out well for Republicans. Obama's going to have $1 billion. Obama, who had sung the praises of public financing all throughout his time as a candidate, then he found out that he had a whole lot of money coming in. And all of a sudden, he wasn't such a fan, and he kept saying that all of his private donations amounted to, quote, a parallel public financing system. Greg, you know what we call that kind of parallel public financing system?
What's that?
Private financing. The exact same one that he had been denounced, the same type that he had been denouncing as the root of all evil in every other speech. So my guess is that public financing is, for all extents and purposes, dead in presidential campaigns, that it's kind of almost a guarantee of losing, because the spending limits that come with public financing are just too low to make you competitive in the modern era of campaigns.
Just realized we've got two really good bookends for the Obama speech in today's Three Martini Lunches, but let's move on. You mentioned Obama's speech. Obviously, he spoke in almost prime time on Monday night, going on probably much longer than he needed to explain why he did what he did and trying to defend it. But there were some very inconsistent themes in this speech. Here's four in a row of the president explaining just how great he and America are for being absolutely the lead dog in all this.
I'd like to update the American people on the international effort that we have led in Libya. Confronted by this brutal repression and a looming humanitarian crisis, I ordered warships into the Mediterranean.
But it's not just the military. He also had this to say about what has to happen with the leadership there.
I made it clear that Gaddafi had lost the confidence of his people and the legitimacy to lead.
And what about the impending massacre?
It was not in our national interest to let that happen. I refused to let that happen.
So Obama's clearly calling the shots here, right?
We've accomplished these objectives consistent with the pledge that I made to the American people at the outset of our military operations. I said that America's role would be limited.
And since we've now turned things over to NATO, that clearly still means something has to be done, right? We haven't finished everything yet.
So for those who doubted our capacity to carry out this operation, I want to be clear. The United States of America has done what we said we would do.
There you go, Jim. Mission accomplished. The only thing we were missing was the aircraft carrier.
Indeed, Greg. It's kind of a... I was very disappointed with last night's speech, not so much because... Actually, I'm one of those folks who believe everything you said about preventing a massacre was fine and dandy, and I concur with this. And I think he's right that a massacre of Benghazi would have been a very dark chapter in not just the region's history, but arguably world history. But I don't think there's that much argument on that front. I don't think you hear – I have not found a House pro-massacre caucus. I have not seen many talking heads saying, go Gaddafi, go Gaddafi. There's, you know, as usual, Obama massacred the straw men last night. Really just beating the heck out of them. It's the other questions that were left unresolved. Among them, so how long will our military operations be going on? What do we do if the rebels are you know, by themselves insufficient to drive back Gaddafi's ground forces? And there's some very ominous bits of news on that front today. Who are these rebels? I mean, there's some talk that some of these guys are affiliated with al-Qaeda. It's possible that we will get rid of one terrible SOB who has sponsored terrorism against Americans and then put al-Qaeda sympathetic leaders in charge of Libya, which is not really an improvement from where we sit. And then, of course, you know, almost completely ignored was the whole question of, say, you know, Mr. President, you consulted with the Arab League but not with Congress. And that's kind of, you know, contradictory to everything we know about war making under the U.S. Constitution. Most of these issues went completely unremarked, and it was a great deal of patting himself on the back, and it was very frustrating. There are many things that were disturbing about that speech last night, Greg. I think nothing's more disturbing than in the eyes of Obama and everyone around him at the White House, they thought that was reassuring.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible to me, Jim, that he really didn't address any of the outstanding questions. Like you mentioned, there wasn't any pro-massacre side to this story. This is a guy who likes the sound of his own voice. The number of words apparently is very important to him because he used a lot of them without actually saying anything substantive that was new, and I'm not really sure it moved the needle much.
We're kind of getting used to this from Obama of these, you know, on the one hand, you know, some people would have us nuke Tripoli, but then other people would have us cheer on the massacre. But I have come up with this sensible middle course. You know, I believe I quoted last night in the morning jolt, Caleb Howe summarized it. I authorize this war that is not a war, which is narrowly focused, but broad in scope, so that we could lead as helpers. You know, I mean, it's a jumble. And, you know, maybe if we get something right in this, that'll be a, you know, it'll be by accident, it seems like. So, and the other point I would note, and this it's interesting to see Obama's insistence, and, you know, we're not going to use ground forces. If air power alone was enough to win wars, the world would be a happier and better place, but it's not. You know, Kosovo was a mess, and we actually kind of got lucky in that category. You look at Afghanistan, you look at Iraq, you look at almost the entire history of modern warfare. Very rarely is air power alone sufficient to win a war. And I think one of the things that I kind of was left – It was alluded to, but certainly not expressed explicitly in last night's speech, Greg. He said, look, we can't leave Gaddafi in power, right? Right? I mean, this guy's, you know, one of the premier sponsors of terror, right? We're not going to leave an anti-American dictator with revenge on his mind in power with access to funds and a terror network, right, Greg?
You would think that would have been the implication, but he pretty much walked it all back by the time he finally stopped talking, so... Go figure. Quickly, yeah. On to number three now as we're almost out of time. And Jim, is there any better way to follow up on a very long, unnecessarily long speech on Libya than to go to another fundraiser to really get yourself focused back on what's most important to you? That's what the president's doing tonight.
Oh, not just one, Greg. Two up in New York City. You know, and it's kind of turned into this you know, recurring theme over at Campaign Spot. This, like, I just every morning look up to see what the president's schedule is, and it's just there's something on it that is, you just roll your eyes. They don't list the rounds of golf that he plays on his, you know, official daily schedule. But almost inevitably, for a country that is, for a wartime leader who has just launched new military action with you know, not a great deal of public support. I understand Gallup has him at split 44-44 on his handling of the Libya situation. Massive $1.6 trillion deficit this year, an ongoing budget fight on Capitol Hill. The House, you know, I mean, you just go down the list of all the major problems in this country. At least once a day, there's something on the president's schedule that is just leaves you rolling your eyes. And you know, we had the whole fun of the bracket picks a few weeks ago, and now, of course, the president's picks are all wrong. But you know, now he's doing fundraisers, and I just, you know, you kind of, I mean, I realize that complaining about the president doing, you know, campaign fundraisers is kind of like complaining about the rain. I mean, it's just going to happen no matter what. But what's fascinating is you see this criticism coming from the outside. And this White House never feels the need to adjust it. And we're always the ones with the problem, even though, as I listened, you know, laid out yesterday, they always end up making some steps a couple days later to make up for that. So, again, I think the way – what we expect out of a president in wartime is very different from the way Obama sees his duties in wartime. And it's frustrating, but it is, you know, what we've come to expect from this president.
Careful, Garrity. You start poking around asking questions at fundraisers, you'll end up in a junk closet.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll find out whether anybody gets so abducted and detained this evening in New York. Hopefully not. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow at this time for the next 3 Martini Lunch.